What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Trust the Podcast on Sikkim365.com, brought to you by Burt Kulch and Ford in Waco since 1936. Ford's the number one selling truck in Texas, 43 years running. There's no better way to tailgate with a Ford than from BK, locally owned dealership, also sponsored the Ford Tough Player of the Week, also brought to you by WellMed Medical Management and USMD out of Dallas. Craig Smoke with you as always, Sikkim 365 radio host, also team reporter, joined as always by Grayson Grundhafer, director of broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter for Sikkim365.com. And thanks to our tremendous sponsors, we are back again this week. And this week, we are actually talking about a game. That's right, Houston and Baylor coming up this Saturday at McLane Stadium after some creative and last-minute scheduling on the part of both schools last weekend. Mack Rhodes and company were able to find a replacement game, or an additional game, I guess, after the cancellation of Louisiana Tech. And it is the Houston Cougars. For the first time, these two teams will meet since 1995. So pretty exciting, this matchup that none of us were expecting, but that we've talked about at times over the last few years. So that's what we'll spend the most of our time on this afternoon, previewing Baylor and Houston. And we'll also ask some questions from you in the mailbag as always as well. But Grayson, Houston is up next. What's next? It's what, you know, Baylor's always asking as a football program. Matt Rhule started that. Dave Aranda's continued that. The player's mentality is that. And what's next for them now is Houston. So just your thoughts before we get into this preview on, well, I guess how you're doing this week, but also on this game coming together.
Man, this is an exciting week, isn't it? Football's here. I'm just praying that nothing happens over the next 48 hours and that we can actually watch some football. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, to just go out and see these guys compete. And that's what I'm excited for. And so it's been a really good week. The excitement continues to build, and I'm sure all Baylor fans are really, really excited to go out and see what this Baylor staff can do and what these players can do and kind of what they've been working on throughout fall camp. So really an exciting time period. So it's been a great week for me. Really just one of those time periods that's kind of special after everything that has, you know, everyone has gone through throughout this year of 2020. And so now moving forward, get to see football, get to see that it turns out that the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC looks like they were the smartest people in the room, because now it looks like the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are starting to circle back and starting to regret their decision and then using excuses that, oh, they have an extra month, which means they're somehow safer and somehow taking more precautions. It's hilarious. But yeah, I just think this has been a great week and great to see the leadership of the Big 12 do a good job, and great to see the leadership at Baylor do a great job in scheduling this game and allowing Baylor to compete on Saturday.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing this all came together. It was looking like, you know, a DOA situation, Baylor getting this extra game in just a few days' time by about last Thursday. It just wasn't looking good. And then all of a sudden on Friday, you know, Mack Rhodes had, I guess, sent out some feelers, and they started to get word about, you know, this Memphis game with Houston might get called off. And so they started tinkering with the idea. Obviously, there's a good relationship with Houston because Mack Rhodes was there and Jeremiah Dickey was there. And, of course, you know, as I wrote earlier this week on Sikkim365.com, there's a lot of other connections. But, you know, the power people who can make this happen do have a good relationship with University of Houston's people. And so they reached out. Houston had a couple of hurdles, and that was, of course, the fact they had a game scheduled with Memphis, even though there were murmurs about Memphis needing to cancel because of a rash of positive tests, but nothing was official. And so Baylor said, hey, we're interested in playing you guys, but we realize that you've got a game scheduled. And it's also, you know, obviously short notice. But by the next day, in what was a very short window of availability, I guess Houston got kind of tickled with the idea and realized, hey, Memphis might be off the table. And so they decided to go ahead and help make it happen. And here we are now, Baylor and Houston for the first time in 25 years. And all was put together in about 12 hours time. And as we're talking about this, Ross Dellinger, who I think is one of the better college football writers out there, he writes for Sports Illustrated. Just as we're talking about this, I see a tweet from him, an article that he wrote on how this game came together. I gave you the bare bones of it, but yeah, it was like 15, 18 hours. This game was able to, you know, come together. So pretty cool how, you know, when you're in a pinch and when you need something to happen, you know, as hard as sometimes we hear things are to pull off, whether it's a scheduling a game or whatever the case may be, they made this look awfully easy, and it's not normally this easy, but it was in this case. So kudos, obviously, to Mac Rhodes and Jeremiah Dickey and everybody involved.
Definitely. So now moving to football, and Houston comes in to take on Baylor on Saturday. Really, really excited about this matchup, Craig. I think, obviously, the Louisiana Tech matchup would have been a great one, would have been another very competitive one, as Louisiana Tech was a 10-win team last year. But Houston is a program under Dana Holgorsen that I feel like we've gotten to see Dana a whole lot at West Virginia, and now getting to see him at Houston, it's a great opportunity for an in-state matchup. And I think it's going to be a pretty good one on Saturday. And based on how the other teams in the Big 12 fared last weekend, this is a big one for not only Baylor, but really for the conference as a whole. I mean, now that these other conferences are deciding they might play football, it makes things a little more interesting for the college football playoff and how exactly that's going to take shape. But I guess my overall point is, I think that now we have to start looking at and going, man, we kind of need the Big 12 to win some games, because I don't know if the college football playoff is going to look at the Big 12 with very much favor with three Sun Belt losses.
Yeah, that was a shaky opening weekend, to say the least, for teams like K-State and Iowa State. Not a good look for the Big 12. I don't get so caught up in all the conference pride and things like that, so I'm not fully on board. Oh, well, the Big 12 stinks. I think that it's circumstances are different. I think that you get upsets on the opening weekend, and it's not all that surprising when maybe it feels like there's more of those this opening weekend, given how just sort of off everything is. But yeah, the Big 12 could certainly stand to win some games sooner rather than later, and Baylor getting a win over a team like Houston would go a long way after what we saw last weekend. But it is very interesting, you know, just to see that opening weekend get underway. And then, as you referenced a few minutes ago, here in the last 24 to 48 hours, you know, the Big Ten's come out and said they're going to play again. And all of a sudden, the Pac-12's muscling governments locally to try to play again out of nowhere. Science and stuff, I guess, is off the table now, or the science just happened to work in conjunction with them all of a sudden. But man, it certainly makes the last few months look a little weird, or even weirder when you think about all the decisions that have been made and now where we are. I mean, there was talk about like canceling the entire thing, and like, oh my God, I can't believe we haven't canceled every game imaginable. And now here we are, and we're one game into the season, or two for some, and the two big conferences that everybody was trying to toot the horn of about 3 weeks ago are now scrambling to get back, even though the science hasn't changed whatsoever. It's just so crazy. It's so crazy that this is how this has worked out. But, yeah, the college football playoff ought to be interesting. I don't know how all of this is going to work, but I am glad that Baylor's at least got a game and doesn't have to wait yet another week, which they might have had to have done if Houston wasn't able to come and come to an agreement with them last weekend. So, pretty wild how we got to just the season. Pretty wild how we got to this first game for Baylor, considering this is the first game they've had on their schedule now. Thankfully, we have not wasted time previewing Ole Miss or wasted all that much time previewing La Tech, but we will preview here in just a moment the game coming up this weekend. And hopefully now here as we record this on Thursday, there's no last-minute surprises. But, yeah, what a great game to at least get the season started off. So, Houston, Dana Holgorsen, we know a lot about him, as you said, from his time at West Virginia. Baylor fans plenty familiar with him. But, Grayson, where do you want to start off with Houston? Take a look, I guess, offensively is where the biggest threat's going to come from, just because you look at their head coach, and that's what he's always done. Clayton Tune, I know they have at quarterback, who's got a little bit of experience. That was a big Kendall Briles commit when he was at Houston for a cup of coffee a couple of years back. But Toon has since, you know, seen a lot of time back there. I know that they had set themselves up with red shirts and whatnot to try and make this a big year, kind of tanked there in year one under Holgorsen. That led to Derek King sitting out and subsequently transferring to Miami, where he's already made his debut. So the Bears will not be seeing Derek King, but they will be seeing plenty of other talents. So, Grayson, let's get started with your thoughts on Houston and the matchup they pose for Baylor this weekend.
Yeah, Clayton Toon is kind of where I'm going to start, because I think that guy is going to be what makes or breaks Houston as a team this season. So he was actually a guy who Baylor looked at in the 2018 class. They didn't offer because, of course, Gary Bohannon committed, but he was definitely going to be, in my opinion at least, how I remember it was, if Baylor did not get Gary Bohannon, then Clayton Toon was probably going to get an offer. And as a freshman at Houston, he threw for 795 yards and 8 touchdowns in 5 games, only 2 interceptions. Looked like he was really going to be a pretty solid college football player. And then last year came in. He didn't play bad last year, but you know, 59% completion percentage is okay. 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns in 7 games. Those are all pretty good numbers, but the 9 interceptions were what really, really made his year go from pretty good to just okay. You can't have that kind of turnover percentage, especially when you're talking about a team that has a defense that was really, really bad last year. So this offense, for instance, last year, they scored 30 points per game, just a hair over that, good enough for 51st in the country. Coming back, they have guys like Kyle Porter, who, of course, transferred from Texas. He had a good year last year, 615 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns, also 128 yards receiving. So he is a threat to catch the ball out of the backfield. They really went by committee running the ball. They don't really have a superstar, you know, 1,000-yard rusher. Porter led them with 615 yards. So it's going to be very much by committee. I think Mulba Carr is probably going to be the other guy who takes a significant carry. So those two guys out of the backfield. And then at the receiver position, there is one guy you have to mention. And they have a guy who, in my opinion, is definitely one of the top receivers in the country. Very, very productive in his time at Houston. And that's Marquez Stevenson. Last year had a very solid year. Over 900 yards receiving and 9 touchdowns, averaged 17.5 yards per catch. The year before had 1,019 yards receiving and 11 touchdowns. So this is just a guy who really, really can do a lot of things for them. They also get him some carries on reverses and sweeps and things along those lines. So he's really where the offense, I think, is going to funnel towards. And if Baylor can find a way to shut him down, I think that's where they really need to start. I think they're going to have really no issue, in my mind, stopping the run game from going crazy. So they got to find a way to stop Marquez Stevenson from making those huge plays and those contested catches. And I think that's going to be a huge key to this game.
Yeah, that's the name I've probably heard the most often this week. Just, you know, fans who have been curious or just previews that I've come across. Marquez Stevenson does seem to be the X factor, I guess you could say, in this game in a lot of ways. And, you know, Baylor fortunately has some good defensive backs that will be challenged, but that should be up for the challenge. Guys like Kalen Barnes and Raleigh Tejada, obviously. So, yeah, Marquez Stevenson definitely one to watch. And it was a rough year for them last year, 4-8. They were 2-6 in the AAC. And, you know, just a few years ago, they were obviously competing for the AAC championship. And Greg Ward was going crazy. Tom Herman was the hot name in coaching. They didn't lose much to the NFL, just a draft pick, just one big offensive tackle, though. Josh Jones went in round 3 to the Arizona Cardinals. But, yeah, the game would have been a little bit more interesting if Derek King stuck around, that's for sure. That would have spiced this thing up a little bit. But I do think Clayton Toon's a pretty good little quarterback, so they're going to have to be careful with him. Although, like you said, he can run into some turnover issues. What else are they – so, good couple good running backs, as you mentioned, that are pretty familiar names, I think, if you follow college football. Stevenson, obviously, Clayton Toon, a quarterback. These are the names to know. What else are you looking at as far as Houston in this matchup on Saturday?
Yeah. So also just kind of talking about the offensive side a little bit. So last year, obviously they lost Josh Jones. They also lost another guy who I do think could be an NFL draft pick in Jared Williams, a guy who Baylor was looking at to possibly bring in. He chose Miami over Baylor. And so Baylor ends up, of course, with Jake Burton instead of Jared Williams. So he's at Miami now. I think he's got a chance to be a draft pick. So they lose two tackles on the offensive line. Good and bad news. Good news is they played without Jared Williams for most of last year. So I guess they're not really missing too much in that regard. Bad news is that their offensive line gave up 35 sacks last year, which was more than Baylor, and good for 114th in the country protecting Clayton Toon. So all that to say, if Baylor can win one-on-one matchups with defensive linemen against the offensive line, Clayton Toon's going to have a rough, rough day, as he had a rough, rough season last year just with the amount of hits that he took. So that's another key area to look at. Houston does not protect the quarterback well, and Baylor does a great job of getting after the quarterback. Of course, the Bears were in the top 10 last year in sacks. They lose a lot, but a new defensive scheme and the kind of blitz packages that I expect to see from Baylor could make up for the losses that they did have.
Yeah, I'd imagine a lot of William Bradley King trying to make Clayton Toon's life hell. I mean, that's what we've been anticipating ever since his transfer. He'll be one of the guys involved. I mean, hard to know who's, you know, all going to be involved as far as, you know, getting to the quarterback. We have a loose idea, but I'm sure there's some, you know, more exotic blitzes or just ideas that we have not been able to tap into just yet or see, obviously. We haven't been able to see anything. So, yeah, I imagine one of the goals will be getting in that backfield, just like it is for every team, but in particular, try to rattle Toon a little bit, not let him get too comfortable or too into a groove. So, offensive line, interesting notes there. And, yeah, I forgot about King also having his teammate roll over there with him to Miami. And I do remember that now that you mention it, that it was down to Baylor in Miami for the big man. So, good to know that he made that decision now. I congratulate him in hindsight even further on that decision that we won't be seeing him on Saturday. So, I mean, offensively, that's where they're going to be the biggest threat. But I think there was one thing that was quite interesting that came out of this week, and it was when one of the assistant coaches for Houston was talking, and I believe it was their defensive coordinator, perhaps their secondary coach. And I know that they've hit that transfer market pretty good. So he was making the comment that, you know, they've got some new faces and whatnot, and that this is maybe the best secondary that he's ever coached. I read that like 2 days ago. So I found that, you know, found that to be interesting, to raise my eyebrows a little bit that he put that out there. So I guess they're feeling good about their secondary. They've been known in the past to have big guys up front like Ed Oliver, although he's very much been gone now for a couple of years. But they have had talent like that in the past. I mean, Houston's had some good defenders. They've just not really had great defenses. They've kind of been known more for their offense. But defensively, with this new Larry Fedora offense debuting in Waco on Saturday, what are you expecting from the Cougars on that side of the football?
Yeah, they so I guess the first place that we can start is with that secondary that you mentioned. They return pretty much everyone, and they have a lot of veteran guys. They're going to start two juniors and two seniors, I believe, in the secondary, which is, I mean, that's great news for any program when you have that kind of experience starting. A name to, I guess, keep an eye on, and one who I think Baylor fans are pretty familiar with, is Deontay Anderson, who actually chose Ole Miss coming out of high school, was a big-time four-star recruit, decided to go there, then transferred out of Ole Miss, and Baylor was actually rumored to kind of be involved in possibly getting him to transfer to Baylor. That didn't end up happening, but last year, 48 tackles and 12 pass breakups, which is a huge number in college football, 12 pass breakups for a safety. That's a really good job. That's a player that's getting the job done. So Deontay Anderson, he'll be flying around. Another guy I want to mention, I think it's kind of an interesting stat line. So I don't know if Damarian Williams played safety last year, but everywhere I look, he's listed as a cornerback. And somehow he was second on the team in tackles with 73 tackles. So My bet is he probably played some cornerback or maybe played some slot coverage, but he is listed as a cornerback this year for this Houston team. But he's a very physical cornerback, a guy who can make plays in the open field and bring guys down, which is exactly what you want to see from that spot. He had two interceptions last year, so he's also kind of got that ball hawk mentality. And he also forced a fumble. I mean, it's pretty interesting. This team only forced a total of 14 turnovers last year, and he forced three of them. So he's definitely one of the guys to keep an eye on in that department. So, yeah, I agree. That secondary is going to be very, very tough to deal with, I think, for this Baylor offense. And that means Charlie Brewer's got to make good decisions, and the Baylor wide receivers have to grow up quickly. They're going to have to make a lot of plays for this offense. And I think we've seen flashes of a lot of these guys in the past, but we haven't seen them all as consistent starters outside of Tyquan Thornton. So we'll see how they're able to deal with this kind of vaunted, I guess you'd say, secondary based on what their coaching staff was saying. But I think the receivers will be all right. I think they'll find enough creases and enough ways to impact the game that they don't necessarily have to beat these DBs all the time to be productive.
Yeah, Houston allowed 34 points per game last year, but you know, it's not going to be the exact same looking defense for some of the reasons we've mentioned. But yeah, that matchup is going to be interesting because you do have some veteran solid guys in their secondary, but I mean, Baylor's wide receiver core at this point is pretty veteran. RJ Sneed's played some football, Tyquan Thornton's played some football, so on and so forth. I know that he's got some young guys. You know, we're going to see the return of Gavin Holmes, and who knows who else may, you know, appear as well as far as some of the younger receivers go. But should be one heck of a matchup and maybe the determining matchup, although obviously whoever can run the football is going to be in good shape to win the game on Saturday as well. But there's no doubt last year with Houston, amongst their disappointments, and there were numerous, that defense was a big part of the disappointment. They were not very good. So if anything, I would expect some improvement just naturally based off the fact they've had another year under their belts, as disrupted as the year may have been. Grayson, offensively, they've got some pieces. They've got a good little quarterback, great receiver, a couple good backs. Defensively, just ran down. Secondary could be a particular threat. Deontay Anderson, a name that should be very familiar, as you said, to recruiting fans. I remember how highly heralded he was coming out initially and then going to LSU. So Dave Aranda, we'll see a former player of his in a roundabout way.
Oh, Ole Miss. Yeah, it was Ole Miss. Right. Yeah,
Ole Miss. Good. Okay, yeah, you're right. I don't know why I was thinking. He got recruited by LSU, though, right?
Recruited by everybody.
Yeah, okay, so that's what I'm thinking of. But regardless of player, he did recruit. So there will be some familiarity. What else jumps out to you, if anything, on the Cougars?
Yeah, so you actually kind of briefly hit on it a little bit, and it was the fact that their run defense actually gave up over five yards per carry, 179 yards per game, and two touchdowns. So what that tells me, first of all, immediately, is that Trustin Ebner and John Lovett are going to have opportunities to score in this football game. I actually expect both to at least score one touchdown. I think combined between the two, they'll at least score three touchdowns. So I'm expecting a big game from those two guys. And, you know, I just think that Baylor's going to be able to find ways to run the football. And I think that that's going to be – those are going to be its two guys that really excel because of it. Also, the Houston defense only had 21 sacks last year, 94th in the country. So, once again, they don't get after the quarterback well either. And that's great news for a Baylor offensive line that gave up a ton of sacks last year. Baylor was ranked outside the top 100 in protecting the quarterback. So they really, really, you know, this is a good matchup for them in that regard, that they're not probably going to get blown off the line. And if they are getting blown off the line and giving up a bunch of sacks, that's an immediate problem for this Baylor team moving forward. A couple guys to watch at the linebacking core that are going to be trying to slow down the run game and also get after the quarterback. Grant Steward last year, he led the team in tackles with 97, but he was kind of playing safety and linebacker. This year, he's really sliding into that will linebacker position. So I expect him to help in that department. I also expect him to blitz and get after the quarterback a little bit more than he did last year. And then another guy at that bandit position, I believe, for Houston is Peyton Turner. And I think you're going to see him definitely come on some blitzes. He's a guy, he had 3.5 sacks last year for a team that only had 21 sacks. So he had a good chunk of it. He also had 33 tackles, 7.5 tackles for loss. So those are also two guys to keep an eye on. I know they also brought in a grad transfer. I believe he's from Rice, which is Giovanni Stewart. He'll be playing the Sam linebacker position. So a new face there for Baylor to have to game plan for. But those are some of the familiar names. And up front on the defensive line, they're pretty much just, it's a bunch of veteran guys that really haven't proven a whole lot. Don't have a lot of sacks, don't have a lot of big plays in their pocket. And so I'm expecting the Baylor offensive line to have a good day. And like I said, if they don't have a very good day, that's not a great sign, in my opinion, moving forward, especially when you look at, I know they play Kansas the next week in which, oh, okay, that's not a big deal. Then they go to West Virginia where they're going to go up against the Stills brothers. So, if they don't have a good game this week, I think that West Virginia game becomes very much more challenging.
Yeah, and West Virginia, a team that actually looked good out of the gates. They looked pretty good in their matchup, and I think they're going to be one of the tougher teams this year in the Big 12, especially coming out of the opening weekend. KU, oof, that was rough. That was very, very rough, and they're so bad that, like, when the opening weekend Big 12 upsets get mentioned, like, theirs isn't even that big of a deal. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, wow, K-State lost and Iowa State lost and Kansas lost, but, like, that's not as much of a surprise.
Do you think next year they finally aren't favored in their opening game? Because I feel like they shouldn't be.
I mean, you would think that Vegas would eventually kind of get the memo, but I guess it's just, like, the thought is, like, at some point they've got to be, like, in a game or win a game. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of, because they've given us no reason to believe otherwise in them at all. And, you know, Les Miles, it's not like he just got there. He's had enough time there now to at least have something kind of going, and they're exactly where they've always been. It's just, like, I don't even know how you do it, man. That's just kind of become the norm, and it's not even as shocking when they're atrocious like they were last weekend. Even though they tried to make it a run there and make it a game, they still didn't. But Baylor for sure is going to get tested sooner rather than later. So I think the scary thing about this game is that it's obviously a very good opponent that could beat you. But the good thing is that if you do take care of your business, that's a really quality opponent you beat in your first game. And you will know a lot about yourself coming out of it. Even though Houston's not a perfect team by any means, they're a lot better than most of the teams Baylor could be playing this weekend. So this will be a good matchup.
Definitely. And one thing I did want to mention just before we, give our prediction for what we think for the game, I do want to mention special teams really quick. And the reason I want to is just because Coach Aranda mentioned it in his media time this week about how good he thought Houston was on special teams. And they are really, really good. Their kicker, Dalton Witherspoon, 40 of 40 on extra points, 20 of 24 field goal tries that he made. Their punter had an average of 46.9 yards per punt in Dane Roy. So very solid there. And Marquez Stevenson is their return guy. 17 returns for 473 yards and 2 touchdowns. Do not kick to Marquez Stevenson. And I think a big part that I wanted to bring up about this is just kind of watching Iowa State this weekend. They lost that game because of special teams. They gave up 2 special teams touchdowns in that game that allowed Louisiana Lafayette to really not just stay in it, but also win that game. And I know Louisiana missed some field goals, but those returns were massive. So just something to keep an eye on. Those special teams things can flip games and make games a lot closer than they should be. So I just wanted to mention that before we moved on.
I am not going to spend time on Iowa State, but that was a very interesting outcome last weekend, to say the least. But, that is a threat you got to take into account. It makes me thankful to have heard Dave Aranda wax a little bit on special teams and the importance of it at least a couple of times here over the last few weeks. So, They've obviously got their eyes on that part of the game and need to against a team like Houston. I mean, you should always have your eye on special teams. Some people take it for granted and maybe would have won some more games if they had it. But it does come in handy, as we saw with this Baylor team last year. Just one or two plays in special teams can flip an entire game or win a game for you. So Houston will definitely be looking to take advantage of that. But hopefully Baylor's ready for that, because – man, the special teams, man, it can just flip a game like no other. I mean, one way or the other, it can really just change things on a dime. So, that's going to be highly, highly important. So, man, this ought to be fascinating. You know, Houston's got some talent defensively. That receiver versus secondary matchup for Brewer and the Bears, just what Charlie looks like, this offensive line, the new system with Fedora. Holgerson's had his – you know, extra time now for the Houston offense. And yeah, this is going to be a highly intriguing matchup coming up on Saturday, and one that we didn't even know we were going to get. So again, kudos to all the power brokers involved for both sides for being able to come together and put this game on Saturday. This ought to be pretty exciting. So I guess, Grayson, do you have a prediction for the game on Saturday?
I do. I think this is going to be a pretty tight game by and large, but I do think that Baylor will be in control of it for the most part. I just think they have more talent. The matchup actually, in my opinion, favors Baylor really, really well. I just think the things that Houston doesn't do well, Baylor does pretty well. And the things that Baylor doesn't do well, Houston doesn't really take advantage of. At least they didn't last year. So they're going to have to change a lot of things for me to really, in my opinion, miss this pick. I just think Baylor has too much talent. But as we saw the first week, a lot of things can change. So I have Baylor winning this game 38-27, a comfortable double-digit win, but still an 11-point victory. It's going to be somewhat rocky at points in there, and I do think it will be closer than expected. But I think most Baylor fans will come away feeling like Baylor was pretty much in control of the game for the most part.
Yep. I'm going to go 35-24, so in that same ballpark. I do think there's going to be some scoring. I don't think it's going to go crazy, though. But that's still, you know, that's a good amount of scoring, still given kind of what we've seen in the first week so far. So I'll go 35-24 Bears, and I do expect a closer game than, you know, like your typical maybe season opener where you want to just go blow somebody out and you move on to the next one or whatever. Yeah, that's not what this is going to be. So much tougher test and much greater chance of, you know, if you don't look good, getting yourself into a little bit of trouble. So hopefully the Bears look crisp coming out of the gates. And Lord knows they've mentally had enough time to prepare, even though the opponents have switched. I mean, they've been preparing for an opening game now for a while. So hopefully they are ready to get going from the moment that whistle blows on Saturday. So we're both taking Baylor over Houston on Saturday. And should be a good one. One note I do want to mention before we get into the mailbag is the recruiting dead period, which has been getting further pushed back now for the last few months. I mean, this started back in the spring when coronavirus hit, and like everything else, pretty much got shelved for the foreseeable future. And then, you know, 1-2 months down the road, everything starts to kind of open back up a little bit. And the recruiting, you know, rules in college football have just kind of seemingly been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back, visits primarily. And Grayson, today just saw where no visits until the end of the year. Is that correct? I mean, obviously that's pretty huge news for those who follow recruiting and ought to make this signing period, whatever it ends up being, if they do go through with the first one in December, especially interesting. But, you know, who knows what they may or may not tweak before now and then, but no visits until the end of the year. That's obviously pretty major.
Yeah, it's huge. And I know everyone's going to talk about the 2021 class and how big of a deal that is. And it's huge for them. Obviously, they're making their decision much sooner. But a lot of kids have, I think, been able to visit in the past and been able to go see schools and do some things like that. It's unfortunate you can't really close as well. Hopefully, after January, they're able to ramp that back up really quickly before signing day. But yeah, it's very unfortunate for those kids, but it's also super unfortunate for 2022 kids who are hoping to take their first visits and go see these schools more casually than they will in the next fall when, you know, it's almost decision time and things along those lines. So it kind of hurts Baylor in that regard. It hurts every school when it comes to the 2022 class. But yeah, for 2021, you feel for those kids. They haven't really been able to take any visits since March. And so it's got to be tough to make a decision sight unseen. Just virtual tours are going to have to make up for it. But that just happens to be the kind of year that it is, unfortunately.
Yep. So Grayson will still be having plenty of recruiting notes and things that you need to know as far as Baylor football recruiting. But it is going to be odd across the board for everybody, just like it has been pretty much the entire year of 2020. So that's going to be fascinating to see how that kind of unfolds as we get closer to signing day. I mean, just another kind of hurdle in this year of college athletics. Anything else before we get to the mailbag, Grayson?
No, I think we're good to go.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into some questions. We got a lot of those this week. Primarily about Houston, but a few other things as well. And we'll start off with Skim 234. With the NCAA granting the 2020 season as a free year eligibility-wise, has there been any word on how many scholarship teams will be allowed to use? In that vein, can it be assumed Baylor can afford to supplement around 100 scholarships total in 2021? Absolutely. I don't think that that's going to be exactly the way that it works, like 100 scholarships. I'm trying to think of the way that Mac Rhodes phrased it, but while I'm thinking about that, Grayson, do you have anything to add on to this?
No, I don't. I haven't heard exact specifics on it yet. I think that's still being worked out, which is really unfortunate when you say free year of eligibility for everyone and then don't really have the plan officially announced to every school. Because if it's school by school basis, that's wrong as well, because then it's only the schools that can afford the extra scholarship. So I don't think they're going to do that. So I'm still in the dark about how they're going to end up doing that, but I also don't expect there to be every single person staying an extra year. I just don't think that that's feasible.
Yeah, Mac Rhodes talked about this, and I can't remember exactly what he said about it, but no, I don't think you're going to see schools walking around with 100 guys on scholarship. You know, maybe a bigger school that can swing that would do that, but even then, you're still creating a logjam down the road for yourself. But one thing I do remember Mac Rhodes saying was that it is going to lead to some tough conversations with student athletes and coaches, because there are going to be some situations, not this year, but the year after. That was one that he was really pointing to as becoming kind of a cluster, if you will, of a problem, because everything will kind of be intersecting at that point. And he said that when that point arrives, you know, not this year immediately, but next year, that's when they might have to have some tough conversations with players about, maybe this isn't the best fit for you anymore, or maybe somewhere else would be in your best interest as far as finding playing time before your eligibility runs out. So I think that's what you're going to run into. Not everybody's going to be kept on scholarship, and they're not going to be carrying, you know, 100 guys for the next couple years, and nor is the NCAA going to allow that. I mean, the NCAA is given this one-time free pass, but best believe they're not going to just, like, keep this free Wild West open for, you know, like the next 2 or 3 years where – there's all these extra scholarships. They're going to want to rein that in sooner rather than later. So that is going to have to lead to some tough conversations and some players maybe getting scholarships taken away so long as they have a landing spot somewhere else. It's going to be interesting. But, yeah, I don't think most schools can afford to supplement that many scholarships year after year. In 2021, I still don't even think they'll be at 100. I do think there will be some conversations to whittle that number down a bit. Do you think there are guys who would even want to use that extra year with the degree in hand? I get the feeling that maybe only 2 to 3 guys per school will use the extra year that they wouldn't have had otherwise to move on in life, with the narrative being a college football player is too much work for not enough reward.
I mean, I don't know that's going to be a mentality like that, or a narrative like that. I mean, I do think that there's going to be not as many as people are expecting. I think some schools will have more, some schools will have less, kind of based on needs and based on playing time and based on how the young guys are maturing. I think all those things come into view when that happens. I also think you're going to see grad transfers. I think that's just, you're probably going to see more next year than you've ever seen in college football, just because everyone has an extra year, so might as well go use it somewhere. So Yeah, I do get what you're saying. I do think that there's going to be not as many as people are expecting.
Yeah, and I don't really think that narrative is going to be too in play either, the too much work, not enough reward. I think it's just going to be like, hey, you can't be in college forever. You can't – sorry that we don't have a six-year of eligibility to keep you around longer. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta move on eventually. So I don't think it's so much the too much work, not enough reward. I just think it's reality of finances and universities shuffling every year and needing to kind of cycle in and out every few years. So just the natural progression of things. I do appreciate the questions. Alpha Needle with a buy or sell. Grayson, buy or sell. Larry Fedora will be coaching in Waco in 2022.
Sell.
Yeah, I'll sell that. That's a long ways out. But Baylor recruiting class of 2022 will be top 20 nationally.
Ooh, close. I think they'll be top 25, maybe like 21, 22. I'm not sure if they crack the top 20, so I guess I'm going to sell.
Yeah, I'll sell that. But I think they'll be close if things stay as is. Squirrel is a significant contributor in 2020 with less than 2 touchdowns.
Greater than two, right?
Is that what that says?
Yeah. Greater than two.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, I think he'll score two or more touchdowns. So I guess that's a significant contributor. I think he'll play a lot more than we've seen him in the past. So yes, I buy.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I mean, more than two touchdowns. I think that's viable for sure. So yeah, I'll buy that. And finally, Baylor plays all 10 games this year.
I buy it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, once they get this one out of the way, they're in Big 12 play. So the medical testing will be standard across the board. They'll all be working in close conjunction with one another, and they'll have had several weeks of this whole process to figure out what works and what doesn't. So I will buy that just so long as they get the game in this weekend, which they should. I mean, here we are. It's Thursday. They play Saturday. And, barring anything crazy, they look like they're well on their way to playing that game. So, Alpha Needle, do appreciate the little buy-sell format there. ZT Smith, 423, do either of you think we're able to knock off Oklahoma or Texas this year? And I'll save the second one for just a second. But do you think they are capable of beating OU or Texas this year, Grayson?
They play both on the road. And I do think the Texas game is still winnable. I know they looked really good week one. UTEP is absolutely awful, first of all. So just want to point that out.
They are really, really bad. Yeah.
Really, really bad and have been for a long time. Like worst school in the FBS for a while. Like they've gotten nominated for that. So they're terrible. So I think that Baylor can compete with Texas. I think that they could beat Texas. I really do. Oklahoma at the end of the year, I'm not as confident about. I just think, right? I don't know if you feel this way. There's just a certain swag and a certain just aura about Oklahoma right now where I do think they'll lose the game this year, but I think catching them as the last game of the year is like the worst time to play them because I do think they're going to be so much better from the beginning to the end, just getting a new quarterback involved and everything like that and getting ready to try to compete for a Big 12 championship. I know Baylor will be better too, but I think Oklahoma will take even bigger steps. So I don't see them winning that one, but sure, maybe the Texas game.
Yeah, I could see them beating either team, but I do think Texas is more likely. I was impressed by UT's offense, but yeah, there is the caveat of UTEP is an atrocious football program. Having said that, Texas did look good, but you know, just the ease with which they were scoring, I'm really interested to see them play a second time because it was so easy against UTEP. Like, I mean, it was like playing against no defense, you know. But then again, you know, Sam Ellinger did look good, and some of their skill guys look good, obviously. So it was a really hard game to like. If you're a Texas fan, you probably had to be careful to not be like too excited because you realized who you're playing, but you also had every reason to be excited because it was a better brand of offense than you've seen in quite some time. So I think they're going to be good, but both teams are beatable. I was also impressed by Spencer Rattler. His arm's incredible. Everybody knows that. His moxie, if you will, is there. Borderline cocky, but you know, as long as he keeps his head straight and doesn't get too full of himself, I think he's going to be really, really stinking good.
And Craig, their young playmakers looked good too. Seth McGowan, well, yeah, Marvin Mims. Yeah, those are the guys that stepped in and played well. So, yeah, a lot of young guys. But, yeah, you're exactly right with what you're saying. They have some talent. They're so talented still, even if they're young.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to be dangerous. And like you said, at the end of the year, especially when they've kind of been through the routine and everything's kind of, you know, just normal once again, as far as being in the schedule and playing games and all of that. Yeah, they're going to be sharpened up and should be pretty good by the end of the year. So our answer, ZT, is like, yeah, we think they're capable of knocking off either one of them, but Texas would be the most likely. ZT also asked, what happened to Iowa State, K-State, and Tech? Well, Iowa State was special teams, right? K-State, I was on the road heading to Tyler and was listening to that game, and I only caught the tail end of it. And then Tech, that was quite an interesting game, man. Houston Baptist gave them everything they wanted and more. I am less sure than ever about Alan Bowman being some great quarterback. I mean, that story for him has been like, when he has been healthy, he's looked pretty good and shown you flashes of why he could be really good. But then at the same time, he's never healthy. And, you know, and then at the same time, we've seen enough of and yet so little of him that we still don't really have a great idea of who exactly he really is. And we did not get the best version of Alan Bowman necessarily last week. So that was a crazy game. I was pulling for Houston Baptist like crazy there towards the end, because I was just like, man, what a huge win that would be for that program. And hell, you know, half the Big 12's already lost today practically, so might as well make it another one this opening weekend. But Tech was able to eke that one out. So what do you think happened to Iowa State, K-State, and Tech?
Yeah, Iowa State was rusty. So my only takeaway with them is obviously they got caught with the special teams. They're also really slow at wide receiver. They've recruited a lot of guys who look like Alan Lazard who don't play like Alan Lazard. And so they're slow, but they don't make contested catches like Lazard did off the charts. And so because of that, they were actually really easy for Louisiana to defend. They made passing windows really, really tight for Brock Purdy. I think they're in a little bit of trouble. I, you know, at the beginning of the year, I thought they might be a 6-3, 5-4 type team. I'm now starting to trend towards 5-4. But I still think they're going to win conference games. And the reason being is because the next two teams you just mentioned, K-State is exactly who I thought they would be this year. I didn't think they'd lose to Arkansas State, but I thought they would take a step back and maybe only be a 4 or 5 win team on a 12 game schedule. So I think they're going to come into the league play and maybe go, I don't know, 3-6 or 4-5. Honestly, they got pummeled at the point of attack against Arkansas State. They only averaged 2.3 yards per carry while giving up nearly 5 yards per carry. That's not Kansas State football. And I also think their quarterback, Skylar Thompson, continues to hold that program back to a certain regard. They also didn't cover the pass well. I mean, they did not have a good showing. And Texas Tech, I thought they were going to take a step back, another step back this year. I thought they would maybe win 2 conference games this season, and I'm pretty confident in that now because they just gave up 567 yards passing and 4 touchdowns to a team that, I guess, you know, people are scared of their offense. People have talked about their offense, but they gave up 57 points to North Texas the week before, and Tech could only score 35 on them. So I'm pretty confident Tech won't be very good this year. And so I think those two are probably near your bottom with Kansas. I think those are your bottom 3 teams, Kansas, Kansas State, and Tech.
Yeah, I think you hit on a really solid point. It's one that I've heard some analysts use a couple of times. It's on the glaring team speed difference with Lafayette and Iowa State, and just, you know, how slow Iowa State looked for, you know, a Big 12 team where speed's so much a big part of the league. I've found that to be pretty interesting. And yeah, there's a prime opportunity for Baylor if they look good on this opening weekend to kind of just put themselves in that upper tier. And I think that lower tier might be pretty low this year for the Big 12, given just what we saw on opening weekend. But knowing, of course, that these teams could look improved the next game, but still, for all 3 of those teams, there was a lot of ugh coming out of those games for sure. Dylan Reese, are there some conference rules on contact in practice or something that led to the losses we saw Saturday? I wonder if there's a lack of physicality that was a result of COVID rules the Big 12 put in place that other conferences didn't have. Does that question make sense? It does make sense, Dylan, but there was no special rule the Big 12 had that others didn't that led to those showings on Saturday. I mean, we just got off what opening weekend. Navy got absolutely just bludgeoned by BYU, and they did. Ken Niumatalolo said after the game that Navy had hardly had any contact at all because of COVID, that he had made the decision to not practice physicality all that much, you know, just kind of getting what they could get in and not worry so much about the physical side and the actual hitting and just health-wise that would make the most sense. And he regretted it after the game because they got destroyed by BYU, and he owned that. So everybody got kind of like the warning shot that opening weekend of like, that's not the way to go about preparing for the season. And so everybody should have kind of known that going in. So I don't think that excuses the lack of physicality. And plus there were no special rules. Like there were no Big 12 rules that are that different from anybody else. So no, those aren't really valid excuses for any of those teams.
No, definitely not. And if you watched Houston Baptist versus Texas Tech, neither of those teams, I think, were practicing much contact in practice. It was very much air raid. So I definitely wouldn't put it there. I think I do think the lack of practice time, lack of spring ball definitely had an effect. It has an effect on every team, though. So
sure.
I honestly think it was just bad performances during a weird year. And this is what you get with it. So, yeah.
I think there's going to be those games where, you know, you have like the big letdown after an emotional game maybe, and that's just sort of natural. But I think there might be more of those even this year for certain teams. And just it's just going to be kind of a crapshoot, man, on maybe what version you see of a team on a given week. Like, who knows? It could be dependent on players missing or, I mean, like, it's just – it's going to be really hard to predict. I think that's why I went in saying, maybe I said this on Sikkim 365 radio, but this is not the year to be betting money in Vegas on college football because there is just too much unknown. So Dylan, yeah, your question made sense, buddy, but yeah, like there's no special rule. It's just the product of a lot of different things. Sikkim Kentucky asked, I like the question asked in the presser about the difficulty Houston faces in trying to nail down what Baylor's going to run scheme-wise, both offensively and defensively, and how they're going to have to watch so much tape to figure it out. I was wondering if the two of you have given that much thought and if you agreed with Aranda when he said that was a big positive for us going into Saturday. So what Aranda said was while they can look back at Dana Holgorsen's tape from West Virginia if they need to, they got last year at Houston, obviously, with Clayton Tune as quarterback that they can look at. But what he was saying was that if you're Houston, you have no Baylor Dave Aranda tape. You have no Baylor Ron Roberts tape, no Baylor Larry Fedora tape. So what they're having to do is they're having to watch LSU defensive tape and they're having to watch LSU offensive tape because of George Munoz and the likes. They're also having to go watch Louisiana Lafayette defensive tape because of Ron Roberts. They're having to watch Lafayette offensive tape. They're having to watch North Carolina tape from years ago with Larry Fedora and, you know, so on and so forth. But those are the main three. So, yeah, they're kind of having to scout almost like 2.5 teams over the last few years. And so that's where he sees an advantage is that mystery of what's this going to look like. We loosely know, we can loosely figure it out by watching all these different tapes from all over the place, but it's still a little bit of a mystery. So Grayson, how big of an advantage do you think that is?
It's a big impact unless they're on Sikkim 365 and looking over S11's offense and defensive reviews.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I think it's an advantage because there's so much tape out there that they're going to have to try to figure out and piece together and hope that they pretty much either plan for everything or just guess right on the things that they need to prepare for. I think really the main thing, though, for Houston is they're going to be prepared for the personnel because they got to see a lot of these guys last year play for Baylor. And so I think they're definitely going to be focused in on that and then try to figure out the scheme from there. But yeah, I think it's an advantage for sure. I don't know if it's a massive one, but I think it's a plus one for Baylor for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a nice little built-in advantage. You've got an opportunity to surprise them and to be a little bit mysterious. It's always a good thing. But Houston will have some tricks up their sleeve, I'm sure, as well. Fat Daddy, what were your biggest takeaways from the Big 12 teams last weekend?
I pretty much talked about most of them, but I guess I'll talk about one more just because we didn't talk about them. I view West Virginia kind of similar to how Kansas State was last year, a team that could potentially win 8 games and in a shortened season, maybe just in Big 12 play, maybe go 5-4 in conference. And I think they looked pretty good. Eastern Kentucky is absolutely terrible. They lost 59-0 to Marshall the first week of the year and then lost to West Virginia 56-10 last week. But they just took care of business. Their offense looked a lot better, which was their problem a year ago. So they're a team to definitely keep an eye on. Like we talked about, OU and Texas both looked really good. Oklahoma's got some playmakers that I think are going to be really fun to watch this year. And they still don't have their full cast back yet. So they're going to be a fun team to watch. They're going to be very good. Their offensive line is so stout. And Texas looks like they took a step forward. So now, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what TCU, Oklahoma State, and Baylor have because I think we saw kind of a separation point. I think there's three teams that you saw that you were like, oh, they're falling to the side, and that's Texas Tech, Kansas State, Oklahoma, Texas, and West Virginia looked like they showed really, really well. And then Iowa State is the one that's still teetering there with, we know they have talent, we know they have a great quarterback, but they look terrible week one. Which direction are they going to go? I still tend to think they're going to go 5-4, which I think would be trending up still somewhat. But yeah, those are my main takeaways. And I mean, I wouldn't say that I was overly impressed by anyone because the competition was terrible.
Yeah. And I skimped on Fat Daddy's question a little bit. He asked like what you just answered, just like who was impressive and why, which teams took a step forward. And I'm sorry, I didn't include that, but you encapsulate, or you got it all. So yeah, I mean, I'm in line with you. A lot of what I said earlier, OU and Texas look good. Those other three that lost did not. They looked really bad, and they are like in that bottom tier, like you said, at least to start off with. Remains to be seen on Baylor, remains to be seen on TCU, although I think both those teams are going to be pretty okay. But yeah, like K-State, I'm just kind of whatever with. Iowa State, you know my feelings, and I'm not going to talk trash because I realize Baylor's got a really tough opponent this weekend, but that just that was very interesting on opening weekend. And yeah, I mean, I think that's about it. I mean, a couple teams look good, everybody else looked bad, and West Virginia did what they were supposed to do. I mean, that was the basic gist, but we won't learn too much this weekend, that's for sure. There's two games in the Big 12, Houston, Baylor, and Tulsa, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State has not played yet either, so we'll get our first glimpse of the Cowboys. But, yeah, that's the only two games in the Big 12 this weekend. And then the following weekend, here in a little over a week, we'll get back to having full schedules. But it'll be Big 12 play, obviously, as well. So because of that one non-con game, this is – just for the two that didn't play last weekend, and that's it. It's pretty wild, right? Pretty wild and not great for viewers, but we'll take what we can get. So, Fat Daddy, appreciate the question. Wacko for Waco, what's the status on Byron Hanspar Jr.? Don't hear much about the 4-star defensive back.
Yeah, I mean, he's still in that second string unit right now with Mark Milton. That's where he's at in the depth chart. That's where he's pretty much been at all camp. I have him behind Mark Milton, at least as far as my thoughts go. I think the first corner off the bench will be Mark Milton behind Kalen Barnes and Raleigh Tejada. And then I think Hanspard could get his chance. So, that's kind of where he's at right now. I know everyone had huge hopes for him as a 4-star defensive back, but, it just hasn't quite all come together yet. But as long as he keeps working, keeps pushing things forward, he's got a chance to be a productive player at Baylor, and we already know what he can do off the field, which sometimes can matter so much more than what you do on the field.
Certainly, all Big 12, all whatever you want to call it, off the field, definitely. And yeah, I just think that, you know, he's in a position where he's got a lot of talented guys that were in front of him, and he's had guys come up behind him that are talented and just hadn't been able to to carve out his own little niche just yet, but there's opportunity there, and there will be opportunity. So it's really, quite frankly, up to him to seize that. But there's a lot of good players in that secondary. He'll be good to go, like in life, though, like you said, regardless of how football ends up working out. He'll be great in the path of life. So, hopefully we hear something, but it has been pretty quiet, quite frankly. Doc Crowell, who on the roster surprises Houston on Saturday, Grayson?
Ooh, so it's got to be someone kind of almost way off the radar. I think I'll go with someone that he's going to start this week. And, I mean, yeah, Houston probably knows him, but I still think he's trending under the radar a little bit, and I think that's Dylan Doyle. I think he has a really good outing for Baylor in his first game with the Bears. So I'll go with him on the defensive side, and I'm going to go with Yusuf Terry on the offensive side. I think he comes in and maybe makes a decent impact in his in one of his first games with huge playing time. If he's able to get on the field, I think Yusuf Terry is going to have the opportunity to make a few plays against this Houston defense.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. We've heard so much about him. I'm looking forward as well to the return of Gavin Holmes. So that's what I'll throw in there. Gavin Holmes maybe surprises Houston a little bit on Saturday. It would be nice. But, there's certainly the opportunity for somebody to surprise. But that's what we'll go with, and we'll see who it actually is coming up this weekend. Did the Big 12's out-of-conference performance change either of your views in the conference championship race? Not so much for me. Maybe not as optimistic, not that I was ever so optimistic about Iowa State, but maybe even less so on them competing or contending in this, senior year for Brock Purdy. I guess senior years don't matter this year, actually. I'll just stop
He's
talking
only a
about
junior,
those.
Actually, Craig.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Why did I think he was a senior? Well, regardless. Well, okay. So take that back. Grayson, delete the podcast. We'll start over. Outside of thinking that maybe Iowa State could contend a little bit, not really, no. I mean, Tech, I didn't think that they would struggle as much as they did with Houston Baptist, but it doesn't shock me that they don't look very good. West Virginia did what they needed to do. I was surprised by end results, but it didn't so much change my view of, like, the conference race. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, OU, Texas, Oklahoma State, Baylor were kind of, so kind of in that order is how I saw them finishing. I had Iowa State coming in fifth. I expected those five teams to really separate themselves from the pack. I'm concerned about TCU without Max Duggan. I'm just curious what that's going to look like. They could be even worse on offense than they were a year ago. And last year they went 5-7. So a little worried there on how that's going to trend. I do think their defense will be good. I still have them at sixth. With West Virginia kind of tied right there with West Virginia. And then the bottom three, which I already mentioned. So, yeah, nothing really changed too much for me. I think if Oklahoma State or Baylor come out here and lose, then things probably do change for me a little bit.
Where did that 5'6 kid from K-State come or at K-State come from? He performed like we imagined Squirrel would when he first got to Baylor. Loved the podcast and listen every week, even if I can't think of any questions for you guys. Well, Doc, appreciate you so much. Thank you for the questions, whether you have them each week or not. We just appreciate you listening. But where'd the 5'6 kid come from, Grayson?
Yeah, so if you were on the thread talking about the games over the weekend, I mentioned this kid during the Kansas State game. His name's Deuce Vaughn, and I actually saw him play three times in high school because he went to the same school that Baylor wide receiver Jalen Ellis went to, which was Cedar Ridge. Out in Round Rock, Texas. And Deuce was a solid player his junior year, but his senior year, he finally got all the carries because the lead running back went to Missouri. So it was finally his turn his senior year. He had 2,000 yards of total offense and 20 touchdowns during his senior season in 6A football. He was fantastic, great speed, great quickness, a guy I really, really liked, but he's not on the same level as Squirrel as far as an athlete, as far as their speed, things like that. I know he performed well, but that's all about opportunity and staying healthy. Baylor's got a lot of other running backs ahead of Squirrel. Kansas State does not. And so Deuce Vaughn's going to get a lot of work for them. And I'm excited. I was very happy to see that for him. He looked great. And That's what can happen sometimes. Those kids can slip through the cracks occasionally.
Appreciate the question and good little background there on Deuce Vaughn at K-State. He didn't have like a huge game like you would think when we're talking about him, but he did look impressive for what he did. And he will definitely be one of the more explosive players for them coming up moving forward for K-State, who, like I mentioned, has a break this week before getting Pig 12 play started. Gabe Hall, what's the deal?
Just dealing with a minor, I think just dealing with knacks and bruises of fall camp. And I just, you know, there's questions on how much run he's going to get this week if he does play. So curious to see what does happen with Gabe Hall, because they're going to need him for the long run for this season.
That was from a trusty listener and question asker, Stifler's mom. So I've seen that a little bit, you know, as far as Gabe Hall and his status. Gosh, he can be such a tremendous player, but kind of his availability, I guess, is maybe his biggest question mark right now as a player, is just when he's available and whatnot. Yankee Bear, how will the new studio get utilized? What new segments will take shape with the new digs? Well, we just moved in, so we've literally done one show there, and that was a dry run, or I guess it wasn't a dry run because it was over the radio, but I mean, like, no cameras or anything, so we're still figuring all that out, but it's going to get utilized as a radio show every day. I'm sure Grayson and I, once things probably return to normal, on occasion we'll maybe even record this podcast there if we're both in town. You know, whoever's doing podcasts of other varieties, if they're in town, can do them there. And I know that we just launched a fantasy football show that Paul's doing on Sikkim 365 Radio. So there's another new show for you to listen to. And yeah, we'll have like interviews, and some will be on the show and some will be, you know, separate depending on the timing or who's doing them or whatever. But just what you would do in a studio, you know, interviews and shows. That's what we're going to do. So that's, you know, as far as taking shape, the studios themselves are still taking shape right now. But it is exciting. If the Big Ten announces they will have a season starting in late October, does the NCAA try to figure out a way to include them in the college football playoff or not? Well, they are going to start right here in the next few weeks. That medical data they got just changed on a dime. Amazing how that happens. But they are going to be involved in the college football playoff, it looks like, Grayson.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's going to be hard for the college football playoff to leave out an undefeated Ohio State or an undefeated Penn State. So I don't see it happening. I think they'll be in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're doing. Is that's why they're playing when they're playing, is they're trying to play enough games to get into the college football playoff. So that's as much motivation as the money and the embarrassment saving that they can potentially, you know, what they can save embarrassment wise at this point, which is not much. So yeah, I mean, this is college football playoff or bust for them, and they're gonna try to, you know, play these eight games or whatever. The 8+1? Isn't that what they're going with? I think
that, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they're doing, and then so yeah, they will be a part of the college football playoff. Who of the following do we realistically have a chance of landing? Yankee asks, Iwuna, Mojo, Jackson, McCoy, Crownover. These are recruits, obviously, for those who don't follow.
Yeah, they have a realistic chance at landing all of these guys. Ike Iwuna is probably a guy. Ike Iwuna and Luther McCoy are two guys that I don't anticipate Baylor necessarily taking at the moment. I think that the other three are kind of the top priorities, it seems like, for the class. Moco out of Snow College, the same school that Blake Bettier came from. Jacoby Jackson out of Mansfield Summit. He's a guy who plays with Baylor commit Hal Presley. He decommitted from TCU about a month ago now, and Baylor's really been trying hard to land him. And then Demetrius Crownover out of Grandview High School, Baylor legacy, superstar athlete. A guy who they're recruiting at tight end but can play a lot of positions because he's 6'7", 280 pounds, and just a freak show athlete. So if they could end the class with Moco, Jackson, and Crownover, that would be ideal, and I think they realistically have a shot at landing all three of them. It's going to be a battle, but they have a shot.
A couple more from Yankee Bear. I believe if we remain healthy, we can get back to the conference championship game this year. Do you?
I think that they have a chance to make it to the last game of the year versus Oklahoma with a conference championship berth on the line. I just don't think that they will win that game in Norman. So I guess they have a shot, but I don't believe that they're going to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I mean, they have a shot, but I'm not counting on it for this season. But sure, they have a chance that they're healthy. And who comes up with all the hilarious food questions in the truer segment? I'd like to submit mine for you two to answer this week. Besides the Sikkim tailgate, Georgia's the best place to camp out and pig out while enjoying a full slate of Saturday football games. So that's true or false? False. I guess right off the top.
Wait, so is Jason's the one that does it, right? Who does
it? Well, yeah, I was going to get to that. I was more or less just answering the question on the true false. But yeah, Jason King's the one that does that. So those might be going away for a little while because Jason has signed on with Outkick the Coverage. Congratulations to him. And will not be as full-time, from my understanding, Grayson, with Sikkim because of the new obligations. So still going to be connected and all that, but I don't know that we're going to be getting the big time food questions like we were with Jason these last few months.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm sure someone else can come up with some creative ones.
Sure.
What do you think on the question?
I mean, false to me. And this is nothing against George's, but I don't ever go over to that area. Like you got to understand for me, I don't tailgate. Like I'd never had like the normal tailgate ever. And I do a pregame show and then I go to the game and that's my preview of the game. So I am not well versed in these pregame tailgating, like those kinds of questions. I observe it. I don't really get to take part in it so much. So I don't even know how qualified I am to answer that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with true-ish on this one. So I would actually say, for last year at least, the Sikkim 365 tailgate is obviously the one-stop shop. But the second-best tailgate, without a doubt, and actually might be competing for the best tailgate, was actually the Lynch's tailgate, which is James Lynch's mom and dad. They put on a tailgate every weekend for the games, and their tailgate was always really, really cool, really, really fun. So I think that one took the cake last year, but besides the last 2 years. But besides that, before that came to fruition, then yeah, it was the Georges. So I guess I'm actually leaning more towards false, but I don't know if that tailgate's going to come back for 2020, unfortunately, with James Lynch in the NFL now.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't get to experience that, but it sounds like it was a good time, and you mentioned that before, so obviously made a big impression. But yeah, I mean, that's not an area I'm well versed in, is the tailgating scene and all that. That might change a little bit. Well, can't change this year, clearly, but when things do one day potentially return to normal, maybe now with the new gig, I'll have a little bit more freedom to kind of get around and check some of that stuff out more so than I could previously. Yeah, again, congratulations to Jason. He's done a lot of great work with Sikkim, and I just saw, we're just talking about him, I just saw a post with an article he's put out on Outkick. So there you go. There's our own Jason King and doing his thing for Outkick the Coverage. So congratulations to him, and congratulations to everybody for getting to this point. Here we are. The game has finally arrived here in the next 48 hours. Hopefully, at least it has arrived, and Baylor will play a game. And next week we can review it. We can actually review rather than preview, as we've been getting delayed in our previews for the last couple of weeks, thanks to cancellations. And now we've finally gotten one in. So hopefully this just starts a whole row of them. But next week we will hopefully be reviewing Houston and Grayson. Other than just excitement for the game this weekend and this finally arriving, anything before we go?
Yeah, I have to add one more question, Craig, just because I told Bear Power 56 I would add it on here. So I'll add one more question to the mailbag this week. Which backup running back gets the most playing time / production this year, Squirrel or Quaylen? My answer is Squirrel if there's no injury, because I think Baylor has two guys that kind of take up Quaylen's role. I think Squirrel can do some different things, but unless there's an injury, I expect it to be Squirrel.
Yeah, I think Quayle Jones is going to be really good over time, but I would go with Squirrel just because of his uniqueness, barring his health, like you said. Like, if his health is intact, then that's the answer. If not, then obviously it's Quayle Jones. But I would expect it to be Squirrel, yes. So definitely. I do appreciate that question to close us out this week. Again, we got a lot of things going on with the new studios that have opened, and still – like, it still smells like fresh paint in there, folks. So it's brand new, and we are breaking it in. We'll be out there for Sikkim 365 Radio every day. And then, you know, like I said, we got the new fantasy football podcast with Paul Catalina that we've added. Saw JD roll through the studio yesterday. Got some plans that we were talking about with him and just the whole site and what all we can do with this new space and this new opportunity. So very excited about that, and looking forward to the game this Saturday just to see how the Bears look and just be thankful that we get the opportunity to see them out there, given, you know, where we were starting back in February all the way until now. So should be very exciting. And Grayson, man, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the game this weekend.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Finally get to watch some football and talk about some actual football. So it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, and we could not do this or have as much fun doing this without all of our great sponsors, USMD Health System, Dallas, also WellMed Medical Management, and Burt Colchin Ford in Waco since 1936, Ford, the number one selling truck in Texas, 43 years running. So thank you to WellMed, Burt Colchin, and USMD Health System for their great sponsorships of Trust the Podcast, and thank you to the great listeners of our show and of this website as well. We got a lot of content up, a lot more that's going to be coming your way as well. And check out Sikkim 365 Radio and go download and tell anybody you know to go download the Sikkim 365 Radio app if you haven't done that already. We would much appreciate that. I can tell you right now, we're going to have some type of pregame and postgame coming up as well. So that's going to be heading your way on Saturday also. So be looking forward to that and more details over the next day or two on what to expect there as we continue to expand the empire, if you will. But for Grayson Grundhafer, thank you as always. I'm Craig Smoke. We will talk to you next week about Baylor and Houston, and have a little football to actually have watched and review. And we look forward to that. Look forward to talking to you again. It's been Trust the Podcast on Sikkim365.com.